Okay. So my name is Mary Fabry, and I'm a clinical psychologist, and I also have been working with WEAC since 2004, providing input, consultation, and program development around the mental health issues. And so I'm going to give you a little more specific information about how we went about integrating mental health care, especially focusing on the trauma, with the primary health care related to HIV. Also, I have no relationships to disclose. You know, I won't spend time here, but, you know, if you think about the context of the work we're doing, it's related to the Rwandan genocide, where many, you know, close to 1 million people were killed. Rape was a weapon of the war. Women were traumatized, some infected. There's no way to know who was infected during the genocide versus afterwards. But the whole issue of violence is a very tangible issue for all Rwandans. I remember the first time I got off the plane, I felt like it was palpable in 2004. And as you talk with people, it's still right there under the surface. So it's something to think about, is the long-term consequences of war and trauma and the violence that is created in acts like genocide. Again, Marge explained, WEACT, but the research project that we developed, of course, studies the HIV progression and response to treatment, but in addition to that, we have a trauma arm of the research, and we went through the process of adapting and translating the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire, the Hopkins Symptoms Checklist, and integrated into an interview, and we were able to interview 779 participants, which is 83% of the sample that is actually participating in the HIV study. And of those women, we saw that over 75% of them had symptoms of depression. And 27% of them actually, using a higher level score of the CSD, met the criteria for major depression. And then if using the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire and using a high cutoff, we found that 58%, close to 59% of the women met the criteria for PTSD. So we're talking 14 years after the genocide, high numbers of a decent-sized sample of women are continuing to suffer with depression and PTSD. And so with that information, it became very clear to us, if you use research to inform program development, is that we needed really to integrate mental health care into the general health care of the women we were seeing. So, thus, emerged the WEACT family program. And I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about that. So, what we ended up doing was, when testing of children became available in Rwanda, which was like November 2006, I believe, we immediately had a sample of kids that were infected through their family situations with their mothers. And so we began enrolling those kids immediately and developing program for them. So now, here we are in June 2008, almost 2 years later, we have 547 families enrolled in the program. We have 140 women or mothers engaged in support groups. And we have 40 fathers engaged in support groups, and close to 300 children participate in the support groups that are run. Our staff now, we have the three clinics that are staffed by three medical doctors. There are 15 nurses. And then the family program, which is responsible for the mental health care, we have all this is Rwandan staff. We have a Rwandan psychologist. We have 9 trauma counselors and 4 family advocates. And I'd like to just say that in Rwanda, you graduate from university with a bachelor's degree and you're a psychologist. Trauma counselors are high school educated and receive anywhere from 3 months to 12 months of counseling skill training. And then our family advocates are women participants in the program that surfaced and really became clear to the staff that these women get it, they are engaged, they can do outreach for us, and so we hired them as family advocates and provide them also with some basic counseling skill training. And here's the team. This picture was taken in June of 2006, which is the year we launched the family program officially. And I would say that most of this, everyone is still part of our team except one of the doctors. So for the last 2 years, we've really had this opportunity to develop a very cohesive team that works together and that we work well with. And you notice I use the word team. We very much have a team approach to this. So as children are identified as being HIV positive, one of the trauma counselors or the family advocates does a home visit. And in this way, we do an assessment of what are the realities of this child and their family? What are their needs? Not only the medical needs or even the mental health needs, but what do we need to try and do to support the family in taking care of this child as they enter this new phase of their life having HIV? Once that home visit assessment is completed, the team sits down and with the whole team, which includes medical staff and the psychosocial team, develop a treatment plan and then start to implement care. When a child has to start ARVs, they do a second home visit to again assess what do we need to do to support this family to get compliance for this child's care. Through the home visits and the ongoing care, as Marge mentioned, some of these issues, the primary problems we're seeing that are related to mental health is depression in the children and the parents, trauma-related symptoms, especially in the parents, family discord, domestic violence, children demonstrating poor school performance if they're going to school at all, complicated grief around losses, some related to the genocide, some post-genocide, rape and sexual abuse, post-genocide, physical abuse, substance abuse, especially in the youth, the teenagers, and then just sort of conduct disorders, behavioral disorders, where kids have impulsive behavior, families aren't able to control them, and they're really not quite sure what to do. Social problems that exist for our families is unemployment across the board. People are unemployed, underemployed, living pretty much subsistence hand to mouth. Hunger is a huge problem. I know that when we started doing interviews and taking information in 2004, 2005, it was very common to hear a mother say, well, we eat once a day. What do you eat? Irish potatoes. We're hearing now, 4 years later, that they're eating every other day, every third day. There's been some families that they've just shared with us an eating schedule where they take turns eating so that somebody's eating every day, but not everybody's eating every day. So hunger is a huge issue. We're also seeing more homelessness, that women and their families are losing their homes because they can't pay rent. And so follow-up becomes a real challenge for our team, that they'll go to the home that someone had been living in and learn that they no longer are living there. And so people are just sort of easily displaced, and it takes time, effort, and some funds to keep on top of them. Also, as Marge mentioned, we're seeing in our young women that trading sex for money is a viable form of helping their family out. And also the other thing they're disclosing to us is the issue of using condoms or not, and they share with us quite openly that men will pay them more money if they don't use condoms. They are HIV positive, they know it, their partner does not know it, but because they can bring more money and they're not using condoms. Families can't pay school fees, and in Rwanda there is a policy that primary school is supposed to be free, but at the same time that this policy got implemented, the government also cut funding to primary schools. So there isn't an official school fee, but what now exists in Rwanda is supplemental teacher income fee. So families need to pay this extra money so that teachers are getting paid what they need to be paid. So it's not an official school fee, but it's a supplemental fee, and so we still have families whose kids, they can't afford to send to school. Also, just so you know that we have about 17% of our families are child-headed households, and 35% are single family. So with all that, we try with our team of a psychologist and trauma counselor and family advocates is to provide individual counseling and group counseling, and we are focusing on the children, the adolescents, the moms, the dads, the couples, grandmothers who are raising their grandchildren, and then siblings who are affected by the HIV status in their family. So what we see, as Marge showed you a picture, is that every Sunday we have 200 to 250 kids that show up for support groups. And it's a three-hour activity. The first hour is playing. You know, kids have a lot of energy. Doesn't matter if they're HIV infected or not. They have lots of energy. So the first hour is playing. And one of the things that we've seen is this really builds self-esteem because of the stigma they might have at their schools or in their neighborhoods that other children don't play with them. And this is a place where they come in. They get to play and run around and do all kinds of things. After the play, they break into psychoeducational groups, which are done by age-appropriate groupings, and the kids sit and they're given information, and the topics range from hygiene to, hygiene, safe sex, nutrition, the importance of going to school, you know, all those kinds of things. And it's done at the age-appropriate level by the staff. There's adolescent groups, and that has been really an emerging group that has special needs, as Marge indicated. And you can see that they have relationships with each other, the bond that they can develop, the sharing that can go on about their lives and their challengings has been very important for them, separate from the larger group of children. The moms also need support. A lot of them have a lot of guilt about having passed on HIV to their children. And so coming together and talking about the issues that they face, whether it's single family, household, or how do you discipline your kids, how do you take care of them, all those kinds of things. Fathers also present an interesting group. Our program doesn't serve men who aren't attached to a family, although we do see women who don't have children. The fathers must be integral into a family group. So we do have fathers who have demonstrated a lot of concern and interest in helping their children with HIV. Marge mentioned here this picture of this grandmother who we all love. Her story is that she had 11 children. All of them are deceased. Some in the genocide, some from HIV, and a few, she said, were natural causes. She is raising 12 grandchildren, and this is just a number of them that were home when we went to visit her, and two of them have HIV. So she also, along with other grandmothers, face unique challenges, which they help each other with through these support groups. One of the things we do, and here's a picture of Marge surrounded by kids, is on June 16th, it's the Day of the African Child, and that's when we actually launched our program in June 16th, 2006. And the last 3 years, we've had a celebration of children living with HIV, invite all the families participating in the WEAC programs. The first year, I think we had 1,200 people show up. And it's amazing that it works. lots of activities, lots of energy, dancing, music. It's really a wonderful celebration of life, which we feel very privileged to be able to provide for the families participating in our program. So, we've had a lot of successes, but as we look ahead, we also have a lot of challenges. Stigma is still alive and well. Poverty-related issues are huge, especially around hunger. When I come back from Rwanda, I have a really hard time going into a grocery store for at least a week. How much food many parts of the world has compared to how little food other countries have, and now with fuel costs. Actually, you can go to markets in Rwanda and there's bare shelves because trucks aren't coming in. It's a landlocked country, so it's a very real issue there. Also, as we're beginning to identify rape and sexual abuse and domestic violence as well, it's against the law, but there aren't implemented programs to refer people to. So I remember early on when our trauma counselors were doing home visits and they identified children were sexually abused, they had nowhere to report it. So they were like, why are you having us ask this if there's nothing we can do about it? So that has been one of the things, and this will be a nice segue for Lucy, who's going to talk about, the other pieces. We looked at primary care, how do we take care of mental health, but then these issues come up of, rights and that involve the legal system, and how do we help people know what their right is, and how do we help laws get implemented by identifying these issues that need to be responded to. And I think one of the most important things that the family program does, and it leads to, again, the legal program, is by raising awareness among the participants in our program, we're really helping them break the silence. This is a photograph from this past June, Day of the African Child, where Claudine, again, who Marge read one of her statements, stood up in front of the whole crowd of parents and kids and talked about the importance of all of them accepting their diagnosis and starting to break the stigma by talking about it. So I think we're really seeing an empowerment come out of our efforts and supported by the staff as well. So anything that we can do to help that kind of motion start, I think, is really, really valuable. Thank you.